from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Every single time that music plays at the start of the G and Ursula Show, what are you thinking? Ursula, what are you thinking when that song hits and comes on?
I'm thinking that I am so lucky that I have the job that I do, that it's going to be a great 3 hours and lots of conversations that could go all sorts of different ways. That's what I'm thinking.
That's exactly it. Every single time, and I was thinking that right now, like every single time I hear that music, right there in my head it goes, I have no idea what direction the show is going. Like, no idea. I should probably be better about that, but you probably know what we're doing at 9 o'clock.
Well, of course. So in our top stories, we're going to talk about this pit bull attack in Auburn. It is a top story. We're going to go into detail about that. Mm-hmm. And then coming up after Heather's newscast at 9:30, the Black Lives Matter organization and its former leader have been under fire for a while. And we're getting new information. We're going to do a deep dive into whether the criticism is justified. We're going to share our thoughts on that. We haven't had a chance to do that on the show yet. And then, of course, we're going to have fun. Okay. We always find time to do that. But lots of deep conversations. We want to hear from you. Connect with us on our State Roofing text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO.
Well, you know what I always say? It's time to give the people what they want. News Ursulas. I was trying to read something at the same time, and I said news. Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
Auburn police shot a pit bull after it attacked an 11-year-old girl and then charged at him. Cairo 7 TV's Gwen Baumgartner reports the girl and her father talked to her about the horrific attack.
These two dogs on right here on the front porch attacking her on... I only seen a few seconds of it, and then the cameras stopped.
His daughter, Mariana, had just gotten off the school bus in her neighborhood when these two pit bulls became aggressive and followed her.
The pit bulls, well, they were barking at me, so I got kind of scared, so I came up to the front porch.
It was here that the dogs began to attack.
So I tried to think fast and fight them off, but... they bit my arm.
Shortly after, the dogs took off and an ambulance arrived. But things re-escalated minutes later. Here you can see an Auburn police officer getting out of his car, only to be met by the two pit bulls. So he drew his gun and fired. One of the dogs was later euthanized after being shot by police. It prompted this GoFundMe page called Justice for Pebbles, which was quickly shut down. It asked for donations to expose, quote, police malpractice while dealing with animals, a claim Auburn police disputes.
Our officer was trying to protect himself and trying to protect others.
The department says when there isn't an animal control officer on duty, other officers have to take on situations like this and act fast.
You can hear him in the video say, hey, hey, and then the dog keeps coming and he feels like that was his only chance to get out of there without being bitten and being hurt.
This incident reigniting the debate on pit bulls.
It's not that they're any more aggressive. It's the capacity that they can do more damage.
Damage like this, something a parent like Matthew can't justify.
Well, I know it was like just an accident, but I mean, if the dog was loose, it shouldn't have bit anybody, you know?
We need criminal charges for these owners that are bad dog owners. That's the problem. We have owners out here who have dogs. You know they bite. You know they're aggressive. In this situation, so the 11-year-old was bit by the dog. And then when the reaction happened with police coming, there was still no control because the dogs were still out and about. And the dog came and charged the police officer. I saw the cam, saw the video of that dog approaching. And they had... like I always say, the audacity to put up a GoFundMe to
thank God they took that down.
I'm glad
quickly
they did.
Because that was ridiculous.
Yeah,
the officer did nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong.
The officer helped make sure that that dog wasn't going to attack himself and any other people.
Back to the bad dog owners. That is what I'm starting to see that we are having a lot of. Like that the person just said a second ago, when it comes to pit bull. It is the capacity and the things, the ferociousness that they can get to. They can really bite hard and are very strong. But these bad dog owners are the ones that are messing it up for others. And I believe that they need to start having criminal charges for dog owners that are allowing their dogs to go out there. So, yeah, the dog's dead. One of them was euthanized. Sure.
The other was returned to the owner.
See what I'm saying?
I don't understand that part, too. So this is the second attack by pit bulls locally in a week. The last victim was that woman who was jogging in our neighborhood here in Seattle's East Lake neighborhood when she was mauled by two pit bull mixes. They were owned by someone who lives in a box truck, and the dogs were initially returned to the owner before they were removed by Seattle Animal Control. Now, I know that pit bulls get a bad rap, but these are facts. According to the CDC, pit bulls make up only about 6% of the population of dogs in the U.S., but they are responsible for nearly 70% of dog attacks since 1982. Again, you don't have to blame the breed or the dog, but the owner. So there's another report from the CDC on dog bite fatalities, and it shows that pit bull bites are responsible for more deaths than any other breed. But again, any breed, including sweet golden retrievers like Scooter. One time a young child came running up to him and wanted to pet him right in the face, and he took that as aggression.
Yeah.
And he kind of tried to warn by doing a bark, but it kind of scratched her face. I mean, his tooth actually scraped her face a little bit. I was like, oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I cannot have Scooter loose around little kids, and I would warn little kids, don't approach our dog because he gets scared. Bottom line, if you're a dog owner, keep your dog under control. Be responsible.
Is that enough, though? Is what you just said, if you're a dog owner, keep your dog under control, is that enough?
No.
I'm saying we need to do more because we have more people coming to homes. DoorDash, Uber deliveries, you have Amazon. We have more deliveries to people's homes, more people coming into neighborhoods.
Yes.
When you have dogs that are off the hook like that, if you're a dog owner and you know you can get criminal charges pressed on you, I think you take it a little bit more serious.
Yeah, I mean, already. Chef, can you look? Because there could be criminal charges already available depending on the circumstance. I believe there are. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is you could face a big, fat, hefty lawsuit if your dog causes some serious damage. It's also, if you're in public, it is generally illegal to have animals off leash. So again, keep your dogs on a leash if you're going to be in public.
Can I say something about lawsuits?
Yeah.
If you'd have told me that you was going to sue me 10 years ago, I'd laugh. Sue me for what? That's a Rocky thing right there. I don't have anything. I'm saying that the threat of a lawsuit doesn't really scare anyone.
Yeah.
Criminal charges do.
As vaping is becoming more common among high schoolers,
it's easier, more convenient, less smelly, and it's easier to hide from your parents.
There is a new warning, though, about the dangers of fentanyl vaping. The North Shore School District has now sent a letter to parents and students warning that some kids at Woodinville High School have gotten sick after buying vape cartridges from another student. The district is worried that these cartridges may have contained illegal substances, including fentanyl. And these students tell Cairo 7 TV it is a real concern.
They're all expecting, recreational fun. Mm-hmm. They're expecting, just a chill time, but then they're getting sick and some could even die eventually, if they take too much.
The number of deadly fentanyl overdoses has spiked in Washington in the past 5 years. According to the CDC, it is the leading cause of deaths for adults between the ages of 18 and 45.
51 years ago, after that was the time that then President Richard Nixon declared the war on drugs, and here we are today in the United States, and we still have a drug problem. Why? Why do we still have a drug problem if 51 years ago, the president at the time, President Nixon, declared a war on drugs? Why? Because it was a war on people and not on drugs. And today is the first, right now, you're actually trying to figure out this drug problem. And Ursula, I just want to say that people say, oh my goodness, I'm shocked that this is happening in schools. Drugs, alcohol, these problems have always been in schools. They've just only been penalized or searched for in some schools and not all. And the truth is here we are in America right now, don't know how to deal with this drug problem because you didn't deal with it the right way before.
Yeah, it seems like it goes from one extreme to the other. So we have a war on drugs, and then now we have this big move to decriminalize all drugs, which I'm totally against. It needs to be a multi-pronged approach. And yes, we do need to address where, you know, the sources of where these are coming from. Some are coming, yes, from the southern border. A lot are coming from China. All these things need to be looked at. But bottom line, when I hear about what is going on in high schools, first of all, I think given all the potential pitfalls, it seems like it's a big accomplishment if your kid can get through high school unscathed.
Facts.
So that's one thing that
I agree with that.
Yes. And remember when we talked about a while back that recent survey by UW found that fentanyl use specifically skyrocketed to, this was the quote, stunning levels last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it has become a very, much more recent, even though fentanyl's been around, it's been a much more recent big problem here. And it is the leading cause of ODs in Washington since 2020. So it's especially been acute in the last couple of years. And again, fentanyl, even the tiniest little grain, mm-hmm. It is a substance that can be up to 100 times more potent than morphine. So just the tiniest bit could kill you.
Right. And you, when we're talking about fentanyl now, I know text messages will come in. Even you just said it a second ago, how, you know, China, and it's a bigger picture for where this drug
is coming
from.
There's a bigger picture and a smaller picture.
And then they're talking about, you know, some will say the open borders. But when we were talking about the crack epidemic years ago in the 80s and 90s, the crack epidemic didn't get the discussion and the cover of what was going on, because really, truthfully, during the crack epidemic, we know that Ronald Reagan and that administration and how they were cool with Manuel Noriega back in Panama. We know about Contras and things like that. We know about Oliver North, who had to testify for almost hundreds of hours with testimony. He gets a 3-year prison sentence, which was vacated, and things like that. But you have so many others that have gone to jail for these things. So again, I'm going to simplify by saying this. The United States of America is behind on how to truly deal with the drug epidemic. And that's why we are having the problems we are having today.
Homeless camps in public places are now illegal in the city of Edmonds. The city council voted 5-2 in favor of an ordinance that could bring fines or even jail time to homeless campers if they refuse an offer of housing when space is available.
Mm-hmm.
Council members like Neil Tibbett say they support this measure so that Edmonds can avoid what Seattle has seen with the explosion of homeless camps.
I'm very familiar with the encampments that I saw personally at Green Lake and Woodland Park, and it just grew until Seattle decided to clear that out.
So where will the homeless in Edmonds go? Well, that's actually a really good question. Earlier this month, Marianne Dillon with the YWCA of Snohomish County addressed the lack of shelter space.
The waiting list was 60 to 90 days long. And as you're aware, the need for shelter far exceeds the resources in our community.
And anyone caught now putting up tents in public property in Edmonds could face a misdemeanor charge with a fine of up to $1,000 and 90 days in jail.
Yes, you will find that. Now, what are the options that Edmonds is doing right now? So all available shelters, officials can offer the homeless, they must be within a 35 mile radius of Edmonds City Hall. So technically, correct me if I'm wrong, Chef, in Edmonds, there's no shelter beds, but we can give you a ticket and you can take this ticket and you can bus you wherever you want to go. Is that what Edmonds is doing? I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth.
Well, that's the idea. I mean, the closest shelter is in Linwood, but typically they go up to most of the people that are being relocated are apparently being given motel vouchers, which is a state-funded program.
Yes.
There are no more vouchers available right now.
So here's the best way to fight homelessness in your town. Be small. If you are a small city, town, then you can kind of push everybody out and everybody can kind of understand. But if you're Seattle and you're huge, right, it's more understanding that, oh, we don't want to do what Seattle's done. You know what Seattle's done? Be big. It's a big place.
Well, Seattle is acknowledging that it has a severe lack of shelter beds. But if you're going to pass something like this, which I actually technically agree with, but don't pass this and then say, but we have no shelter for you.
We both agree with it. You and I both
exactly.
agree
so,
with
I
this.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, this is exactly what needs to happen. But what also needs to happen is you need to provide shelter space. Because otherwise, yes, then everyone's going to say, yeah, you don't want to become Seattle. Well, don't become Seattle and offer some shelter space in your own community and deal with your homeless people. But I mean, we're all a global community, yes. But you know what? We all need to shoulder some of the burden as well.
Hey, Ursula, why is it that that part of the discussion never makes it to the dinner table? And what I mean by that is it's usually, oh, my goodness, these folks, they don't want to even accept the shelter. They don't even want to accept the help. They don't even want to go to the shelters. How come it's, well, there's no space.
Yes, because we're now shedding light on the fact that there is no space. And there are some, don't be, I mean, there are some people who will refuse shelter,
We
know that.
Yeah,
but you need to have it available in the first place before you can tell people, well, you're going to be facing a misdemeanor charge now.
Mm-hmm. And which both you and I agree on. Go ahead, Ursula.
Yes, and I just, sometimes I think, I know we repeat this over and over again, but is that really that hard?
What do you mean? You know we repeat it.
People it's a crime.
Come on.
If you're going to tell people that we need you to not park in, camp in public, which again we agree with.
We agree with. But
then provide some options.
But what if they say?
And then if they don't, then yes. You can face up to $1,000 or 90 days in jail.
Because I think what usually stands out to people in the community, they just want to hear about the enforcement, right? They only want to hear about the enforcement part of it. Like, oh, yeah, 90 days in jail. And, ooh, they're going to finally get some. But they don't want to go to the next part about, well, have they provided housing? And that answer is no, and it continues to be no. So every time this topic comes up, you can expect the G and Ursula Show to say, yes, we agree with you. Now, where is the housing for the people that you want to give these fines to?
Right.
It's not rocket science.
Where are the detox beds for those who can't afford private insurance in Pierce County when you have just a couple of detox beds?
Come on.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, Black Lives Matter. It's a statement that I for sure agree with. The organization, well, that's something we have to discuss. It's G and Ursula.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. 888-973-5476 is our state roofing text line. We would love to hear from you. And let's go back to 2020 after the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police. So many people were desperate to do something to help address racial injustice. And a lot of people felt compelled to donate money. And according to brand new tax filings obtained by the New York Times, the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation got $90 million in donations, mostly from small donors. Today, the group has $42 million in total assets. So, of course, when we read this, we ask, well, what happened to the other $48 million? Apparently, about $20 million or so, a little over $20 million, was spent on grants to smaller BLM organizations or spent on consultants in real estate. So one example was that the foundation bought a house in California for nearly $6 million in cash in October of 2020. But during the period listed on the tax filing, there was only one voting board member, and that was Patrice Cullors, one of the Black Lives Matter founders. And so she claims that she was unpaid, but, I mean, that was basically her mansion. Mm-hmm. And we're also finding out that the foundation dished out nearly $4 million in consulting payments to the board secretary, the co-founder Patrice Cullors' brother, and the father of Cullors' child. One of them was for security services, and the other was for some other company. Mm-hmm. It is clear that there is a mismanagement of funds, a gross mismanagement of funds.
You think?
Well, I'm laughing, but I almost want to cry because I look at this and I think, what a squandered opportunity.
Sure.
And I do find it shameful, and I look at this, and I know that she's denying it, but I look at this and say, all these people, this was a chance, all these people donating and want to be part of the solution,
right,
and thinking that this organization, which, for the record, I want to say, I believe in Black Lives Matter. I mean, so that just the concept of Black Lives Matter, sure, and we need to fight, and I need to do my part to be an ally. Mm-hmm. But when you see and read this, it's infuriating.
Mm-hmm. I never supported the organization from the beginning. I told you and Chef that. Of course, the statement, Black Lives Matter, no doubt about it. 1,000%, 1,000,000% support that. I never supported the organization. I always had, if you will, my third eye looking from above on this. This isn't necessarily pointed towards, because it's not like I knew any new information,
right,
on them. I'm not saying that. But at the same time, we should have this discussion on the nonprofit world, speaking of that, and the lack of oversight and accountability that are on them. Today, tomorrow, or the next day, you're probably going to donate to something. And by the way, I think that's fantastic. I think that's phenomenal. But really quick, when you send, let's just say, that dollar bill, here's what happens. You get a tax write-off. The organization gets to help pay for their overhead. The organization gets to pay their executive director and their staff. And then after all of that, what's left over with that dollar goes to the actual cause. In this case, this organization got money way too fast. $90 million. This happened because there were a lot of corporations in this country, companies in this country, that wanted to show the public, hey, we want to give money, and you are so fast to just give money so you can check the box off so your company can look like you have done the work. This is why. Oh, hey, write that check. Give them a check. $1 million, $100,000 here, $500,000, $750,000, all that kind of stuff. That went fast because there's just no oversight and you weren't really thinking about it. So a lot of companies were just like, I just want to check off the box. I'm sorry to tell you this, but a lot of money in the nonprofit world, what if I told you sometimes there is often mismanagement? And again, I am not telling you this because I'm trying to take the eyes off of the BLM organization. They deserve all the smoke and more because they have really done something awful. And what I mean by awful is this. You see, this right here gives a window into those out there that say, see, I told you, BLM. It is easier for them to just say BLM. You can talk about the organization. That's fine. They messed up. Many organizations do, and they deserve everything coming to them. But the statement itself still exists. It still involves. It's still on my wrist right here. Does not stop.
Exactly. The statement and the intent behind it, and for it was mostly small donors who came up with that $90 million, which is tremendous. And I hear what you're saying with corporations, that, you know, it's easier just to throw money at it and then actually have to address it internally. I get all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like BLM, the organization, did so much damage to the movement.
Absolutely. They did.
And now they're saying, well, we're going to be more transparent. And we've got a new chair of the board, with they've got three new board members, but so much damage has been done.
Yeah.
And I feel like, to some degree, I hope they really look into it, because in some cases I feel like it's criminal. And I think that does apply to other non-profits that take advantage of people's goodwill,
mm-hmm,
and then turn it around to line their pockets. It's disgusting. And we talk about that. I mean, we just talked about it with the thrift store. What's the
Goodwill?
Goodwill, or you know, Value Village.
I took this time, and I was not going to bring up any big organizations at all. But I'm going to tell you, this BLM organization was wrong. They deserve all the smoke.
100%.
But again, we need to really have this deeper discussion and nosedive into the lack of oversight, lack of accountability in the nonprofit world.
And there's actually some statistics on this. Fewer than half of the 15 biggest U.S. foundations, and altogether, those 15 deal with billions of dollars of assets. Fewer than half of them actually report on their investments. So here you've got the generosity of people, and you have to ask, how many are mismanaging that money that is coming from the heart?
Yeah, it's sad. Hey, real quick, I was trying to find a research on this. Maybe you guys can help me. Are churches still nonprofit too? Are they still tax exempt? I'm just asking.
I throw churches in there too.
Churches
better be transparent about what they're spending that money on.
I couldn't find anything on churches paying taxes.
Well, Kenneth Copeland is worth, I believe, about $500 to $750 million. Joel Osteen is worth over $100 million if you'd like a comp.
Oh, and how about Creflo Dollar?
I think he's about $75
million. How in the world can your last name be Dollar and nobody says a word? He can't make this up. Coming up next, we need to talk. And the question is this. Would you work harder for the company you are with today if you had partial stake in the company? We discuss that next. It's G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. At 10 o'clock, what's new at 10? How do we solve the gender pay gap here in this country or even here locally in the Seattle area? We discussed that at 10 o'clock. But right now, Ursula, we need to talk. So, question. Should employees have a financial stake in the company that they work for beyond their paycheck? I'm asking this question. Here's why. A garage door company in the tiny town of Arthur, Illinois, just sold for $3 billion. That's a lot of money. The employees are getting a huge payout. 630 hourly workers and truck drivers will receive an average of $180,000. While long tenured truckers, they're getting checks for $800,000. This business, CHI Overhead Doors, has been in business for 41 years. So I'm just going to simplify it, Ursula, by saying, do you think that employees would put more effort and concentration into their company if they got a little bit more than just the paycheck?
I mean, Obviously, I would say yes. I mean, if you have a vested interest in something, as they say, if you have skin in the game, I think that you are much more apt to be invested emotionally, physically, financially, everything in that company. You're going to want to make sure it succeeds. So, yes. The question is, though, what does the owner of this company get out of this? Chef,
It's sold to a private equity firm, so the owner of the company is also getting a huge payout. CHI Overhead Doors is the name of the company, and the chairman who oversaw the sale, he'd enrolled companies in this ability to get stock through the company about 10 years ago, and so about 80% of the employees did so. And he said, we do it because it's good for the workers. It turns out it's smart business. It leads to more engaged, stable, financially resilient, and less likely to quit workforce, which yields better outcome for companies and investors.
So it sounds smart. It's just I don't know that it can apply to every organization, every business, every profession. I know it can't. But the question is, do you know the average of how many years these people work there too? Because, I mean, again, it would be it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is fantastic. And one of the reasons that I have stayed with our company, even though it's been owned, you know, by someone else. But one of the things is that we at some point did have a pension program, and luckily I was grandfathered into that. I mean, there are things that my longevity here is going to pay off, obviously, at the end of my career. And so even though I've had other opportunities and other offers that maybe, you know, would pay more immediately, there were other things that kind of kept me in and keep me bought into this company.
Mm-hmm. We're moving into a new type of employment. And what I mean by that is we're moving into more of a where the employees, the workers are saying, hey, if I don't get more with this company, I'm leaving, right?
Mm-hmm.
No more are the days that it's going to be companies that are built heavy with very few at the top getting paid and those at the bottom not getting paid, and they continue to build the company. I'm going to simplify. If I got the same paycheck every month, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
If I got the same paycheck every month, I would lose motivation. So people ask me, why do I work so much? Well, not because I love to work. I just love money. And so I'm going to do any and everything to make more money.
Especially at a time when you can.
You see what I'm saying? So it is a no-brainer that there are people that are working right now. Let's just say you're working and you're working next to Charles. You and Charles come to work at the same time every single day. Charles doesn't work as hard. You work harder. But yet you and Charles get the same paycheck month after month after month.
There's no incentive.
There's no incentive.
Yes.
And I'm saying today in 2022 and beyond, there is going to be a place for that person to say, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm going somewhere else where I can be paid more.
And there are companies. Yes, you're absolutely right. And by the way, with this particular company, what I love about that, $800,000. I mean, for many people or most people, that's kind of life changing money.
Yeah.
But I think there are also companies that are still stuck in the old ways of thinking. Well, you know, this is not meant to be a job where people stay even. And I'm not even talking about fast food workers or anything. I'm talking about other companies too, where you would think that they would benefit from people staying. They're like, well, it's just the cost of doing business. I'm going to lose people. It costs money to train people.
They don't have to worry. Those businesses are not going to stay around long. Don't you worry about it. It will all level off. Coming up next, we need to talk at, no, not we need to talk, what's new at 10 is this. How do we solve the gender pay gap in this country? We'll discuss that next generation.